Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 13th of February 2016. Welcome aboard. It's great to have you on the show as a listener, and your perceptions and your understanding is part of the show, and I would like to warmly invite you to participate by getting back to me on anything that comes up in the show that you find interesting. And I'd like to invite you to leave your comments. Unfortunately, the Truth News Australia website commenting has actually been closed for most of the past 6 months due to some issues that are rather complex. But I will be opening the website for commenting again, and I'm quite keen to get discussion and to have your feedback as a listener. My name's Hereward Fenton, and Truth News Radio Australia is a completely homespun original production, and it really is a weekly kind of journey into information that is somewhat obscured, suppressed, hidden, but nonetheless extremely important for our way of life and for knowing about what's really going on at a deeper level than the news ever gives you. Now, in today's show, I've got quite a lot of information to get through. I've got a massive stack of stories in relation to tyranny in Australia, and I just want to try and get through all of these articles, most of them which have popped up fairly recently. I often find there's kind of a clustering of this information that comes out, but when you put it all together, it is quite an amazing kind of shock to see what is really going on in our country with the encroachment on so many different levels and in so many different areas of life on basic freedoms. So I will be getting into that during today's show. But I want to just quickly address a story that has come up and a couple of other things that have just come up in the last few days that are very important. And I'm just going to run through my list here of top articles. John Rappaport, independent journalist who's been on this show before, has published an article where he has brought forth information in relation to the Zika crisis, which, as you no doubt know, has been blamed on, well, the cephalic small head clustering in Brazil has been blamed on the so-called Zika virus. But John Rappaport has actually done some research which shows that there is a connection with pesticides in Brazil. Now, I'm just getting that article up today. I'm just having a little trouble with my laptop today because I don't have my normal mic stand. And in order to open links from my document, I have to hold the control key down while holding the microphone. So that's a little bit difficult. Here we go. Not Zika, but Brazilian Argentine doctors say pesticides. Why would a poisonous birth defect-causing chemical cause birth defects? That's the lead into this article. The manufacturer of the poison is a strategic partner of Monsanto. As I've been telling you all along, look to pesticides. The fake Zika story is a cover to protect the pesticide companies, among others. What do we know about the trumped-up Zika crisis? The actual number of microcephaly cases in Brazil is a gross unknown. At least two different groups are reporting different findings. Pick your number: 404 confirmed cases, 4,000 cases, or 9,000 cases. It turns out that in the US, estimates of microcephaly cases per year range all the way from 8,000 to 25,000. In other words, the researchers don't know what they're talking about. They're using different definitions of microcephaly, They are confused. They're also admitting highly relevant cases of birth defects, which don't, strictly speaking, fit any definition of microcephaly. This confusion applies to Brazil, the US, and anywhere on the planet. And in Brazil, researchers have only found a suggestion of the presence of the Zika virus in 17 cases of microcephaly. It makes far more sense to listen to what South American doctors are saying about the areas where birth defects are occurring. These would be doctors who actually care about what is destroying lives and the lives that are being destroyed. We have such reports passed along to us thanks to Claire Robinson of GM Watch. Here are quotes from her most recent article. Argentine and Brazilian doctors name larvicide as potential cause of microcephaly. A report from the Argentine doctors' organization, Physicians in the Crop Sprayed Towns, challenges the theory that the Zika virus epidemic in Brazil is the cause of the increase in the birth defect microcephaly among newborns. The increase in this birth defect, in which the baby is born with an abnormally small head and often has brain damage, was quickly linked to the Zika virus by the Brazilian Ministry of Health. However, according to the Physicians in the Crop Sprayed Towns, the ministry failed to recognize that in the area where most sick people live, a chemical larvicide that produces malformations in mosquitoes was introduced into the drinking water supply in 2014. This poison, pyriproxifen, is used in a state-controlled program aimed at eradicating disease-carrying mosquitoes. The physicians added that the pyriproxifen is manufactured by Sumitomo Chemical, a Japanese strategic partner of Monsanto. Pyriproxifen is a growth inhibitor of mosquito larvae, which alters the development process from larva to pupa to adult, thus generating malformations in developing mosquitoes and killing or disabling them. It acts as an insect juvenile hormone or juvenoid and has the effect of inhibiting the development of adult insect characteristics. The Argentine physicians commented, "Malformations detected in thousands of children from pregnant women living in areas where the Brazilian state added pyriproxifen to drinking water are not a coincidence, even though the Ministry of Health places direct blame on the Zika virus for this damage." They also noted that Zika has traditionally been held to be a relatively benign disease that has never before been associated with birth defects, even in areas where it infects 75% of the population. Now, a public health research organization, Abrasca, names pyroxifen as a likely cause of the microcephaly. It condemns the strategy of chemical control of Zika-carrying mosquitoes, which it says is contaminating the environment as well as people and is not decreasing the numbers of mosquitoes. Abrasca suggests that this strategy is in fact driven by the commercial interests of the chemical industry, which it says is deeply integrated into the Latin American Ministries of Health, as well as the World Health Organization and the Pan American Health Organization. Now, this article, this research here, illustrates something that we really need to reinforce in our mind, in our understanding, when we see a kind of an overlapping of issues that have at its heart effects on people that are extremely negative, that are health related, that degrade people's quality of life, that are essentially abuses of human beings in various societies around the world. We see an overlapping set of interests between companies that produce chemicals, whether they be chemicals that are related to medicine or related to biotech, or indeed many other types of things. But what we see is that the companies that are profiting from chemicals have an incentive to sell those chemicals. And then this could also apply to vaccines, indeed. Vaccines are another type of chemical. But what we see is that there is this commercial incentive to obviously sell more product. And so in the case of Brazil, we see that these chemicals have been sold through global multinational cartels, have ties into the Brazilian government, and there is where we get the next layer of the tangled web of deceit, because we have corrupt relationships between governments and these corporations, and there are always kickbacks, and this encourages a criminal mindset within bureaucracies. And so the pushing of potentially dangerous drugs and chemicals onto the environment has this double kickback for the companies and for the corrupt government officials. And then the next layer to this is when there is some kind of crisis caused by the criminal behaviour, i.e. the pushing of chemicals and toxic materials into the environment, we see another layer of cover-up where, in fact, the blame is pushed elsewhere, and in this case, the blame pushed back onto a virus, which is part of the reason why the chemical was introduced in the first place, supposedly to control the virus. And next thing, they'll be trying to sell us a vaccine for the virus, which will be another layer of deception, which exhibits the deep and deeply disturbing nest of corruption that exists. And not just within Brazil, ladies and gentlemen, within every country in relation to this kind of pyramidal structure of insanely powerful multinational companies. Now, of course, the pesticide theory here is very important, and I think it looks certainly very relevant to what happened. But of course, last week we were talking about the Tdap vaccine, which had been made mandatory in Brazil just last year, and that also coincided with the microcephaly. But as you can see, this is another example. It's just the same type of thing. We could point the finger in many directions, but you've got to understand the underlying nest of corruption that makes all this possible. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're just heading to break. I'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And we were just covering there in the previous section the latest info on the microcephaly link to pesticides and the other proposed connections there with the Tdap vaccine. Now, of course, I don't profess to have any earth-shaking insights into this. Something else I want to mention, a story came up on CNN, of all places, this week, showing that the Tdap booster, which is the one that was mandated in Brazil and is also heavily recommended and pressured on people in Australia and most Western countries, if you're ever in close proximity to a small child, And I've got some interesting material to share with you on that. But the pressure to get one of these Tdap booster shots is verging on making it mandatory. I mean, the population, the average people, have been so brainwashed and so pressurized by the rhetoric, and also, you know, overly concerned parents, mothers with newly born children, who take it upon themselves to go to great lengths to protect their children, have this tendency now to basically deny access to their baby if the relative or the friend has not had their Tdap booster shot. But this this article here that popped up from CNN on February 5, 2016, says that the latest research shows that the Tdap booster shot protection fades fast. Its protection lasts no more than about a year. And this is extremely important because it completely undermines the whole principle of what they call herd immunity. And one of the reasons why they pressure so many people to get the vaccines is they say it creates herd immunity. Herd immunity being a situation where, because so many people are immune to a pathogen, that there will not be an epidemic because no one will ever get sick to start and spread it, right? Now, herd immunity actually does exist. It needs to be understood that a lot of vaccine skeptics say, oh, there's no such, you know, herd immunity is ridiculous. No, it's not. Herd immunity is actually a very, very important principle. But herd immunity works when people are really immune, when they are truly immune. And the thing that that vaccine researchers, that alternative vaccine researchers have been saying for many, many decades is that the type of immunity that is produced by stimulating antibody production in the way that vaccines work does not produce lasting immunity. It is not the same. It does produce some effect. Of course, there is an effect. But the immunity that is produced is a reduced form of immunity, and its length, its lasting power is much, much weaker. So there is no herd immunity effect from people who have had vaccines against a particular illness. And this is particularly important in relation to whooping cough, because the little babies, the little 2-month-olds and less that are getting this and dying from it, because it's an extremely severe illness when you get it at that age, they're not getting the benefit of true herd immunity, which they would if there were no vaccine. And just think about that. Think about the paradoxical ridiculousness of the fact that introducing a vaccine has actually prevented the development of herd vaccine immunity, of herd immunity. And this is factual now. I mean, this information now coming from mainstream sources, but they're not talking about the herd immunity problem. They carefully left that out of this article. But they're saying, you know, can we make a better pertussis vaccine? What can we do about it? And they're saying maybe we should actually no longer mandate the Tdap booster, because it is actually mandated in the US as well. There are exemptions, but it's mandated. And it's going to be mandated in Australia sooner or later. Let's face it. We're getting very close to that. But they're now saying, well, maybe it shouldn't be mandated since its effectiveness is so short-lived. And they're saying, well, either you're going to have it every couple of years. And, of course, you know, that's just going to massively increase the problems of complications and adverse effects. Or they're saying, we don't mandate it at all, and we only recommend you to have the shot when we think there's about to be an epidemic. That's actually what they say in this article, when we expect one. Yeah, you know, we think there's an epidemic coming next year, so you better get your shot now. That's how idiotic it has become in this voodoo science of vaccines. Now, that's about all I have to say on that topic for now. Just a couple more issues of global news that I want to raise with you. Julian Assange. Now, of course, we've done a lot of coverage of Julian Assange on this show. He went to the UN to have his case heard, that he is a victim of arbitrary detention, and the UN committee which reviewed it, which is a very well-regarded, high-standing legal opinion, found that he is indeed a victim of arbitrary detention. But the powers that be have decided to basically spit on Julian Assange, and they've contemptuously rejected the findings of this UN commission. They've called it ridiculous, and they're not honouring it. They're not even giving it lip service. And The Guardian, both The Guardian and The New York Times, have published poisonous editorial articles basically denying that Julian Assange is a victim of arbitrary detention, saying that he is destroying WikiLeaks, continuing to swirl the allegations of that he is a sex criminal, that there are rape allegations against him, and in fact, you know, there are no rape allegations. There's nothing akin to rape in the allegations that have been made against him, and indeed, they are only allegations. They're not actually charges, and the unwillingness of the Swedish prosecutors to actually come and interview him demonstrates the fact that what they're really trying to do is just keep him under wraps or extradite him to Sweden, because they don't want him to run around free because they're being pressured. But this story is going to continue to unfold, and I'll get back into it and probably do another whole show on the WikiLeaks and the Julian Assange saga, because it really is an incredible illustration of the insanity of modern legalistic government machinations that just twist truth and lies, that just create false narratives, and then do this kind of moral high horse thing where they go and say, oh, this person, he's been subjected to allegations of blah, blah, blah. He's been charged with this. He hasn't been charged with anything. There are no allegations from anyone who's actually a victim. The only allegations against Julian Assange are actually from the prosecutor. There are no victims. There's no rape victim in the Julian Assange case saying he raped me. An incredible story. Anyway, one more thing before I get into the meat of today's show. CSIRO boss defends shake-up, says politics of climate more like religion than science. Now, this story, quite surprising actually, and this is an ABC Australia article, is about a shake-up of the CSIRO, which is a premier science research organisation in Australia, where they have actually eliminated a huge number of jobs from within the organisation in relation to climate science. The CSIRO's chief has told the ABC that the backlash from his decision to restructure the organisation has made him feel like an early climate scientist in the 1970s. And he adds that there is so much emotion in the debate that it sounds more like religion than science. Isn't that extraordinary? Dr. Larry Marshall said he would not be backing down on his controversial shake-up of the organisation's climate divisions, telling the ABC he was yet to be persuaded. The redirection of climate science priorities at the CSIRO has drawn international condemnation, with thousands of climate scientists signing an open letter protesting the charges. 60 positions to go from the Oceans and Atmosphere Division. So, big deal happening there at the CSIRO, and it's very, very important because it indicates that there's a change of thinking. We're going to break with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And that article I was just reading to you there about CSIRO and the shake-up is extremely important, and I'm going to get back onto that and hopefully get someone on the show who can talk about more in terms of what this really means and what's perhaps going on inside the CSIRO. So I encourage you to take a look at that, and I'll put the link up on the show notes. But now, turning to our main topic for today, I want to kind of give you an overview of the deteriorating status of freedom and democratic principles in Australia, because it really is quite overwhelming, and I have a whole bunch of stories here, most of which have just come up fairly recently, but this is stuff that's been going on for many, many years. It's been evolving over many years, and it just keeps getting worse. It just keeps going downhill, and we seem to be picking up speed. And, you know, one wonders, where will it end? Where will it end indeed? And I'm talking about the gradual stripping away, the erosion of basic freedoms and basic rights from individuals by law in Australia. And I want to begin by this article that was published actually on LinkedIn by Matt Barry, Chief Executive Officer of Freelancer.com. That's a major .com for freelancers in IT and other industries. And this guy, who's obviously a fairly successful businessman, has written this very, very long article with lots of information and statistics showing how Sydney's knee-jerk legislation to prevent alcohol-fueled violence is destroying the communities of just the normal people who used to enjoy nightlife in Sydney. It is basically turning Sydney entertainment districts into a wasteland. And it has reached such ludicrous proportions that, you know, it's even people now who don't normally talk about these things are coming out. We're seeing a reaction against this. This particular article, it's definitely worth a read. He actually blames it on the right-wing Christians who are in power in New South Wales. Now, while I do think there's an element of that, that has nothing to do with it, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, I've got articles in relation to tyrannical legislation from all over Australia, from different state governments, both left-wing and right-wing. It has nothing to do with which side of politics you're on. It certainly has nothing to do with whether you're a Christian or an atheist or whatever. But it's a trend within our society. Now, in Sydney, it's become particularly bad. In New South Wales, the laws have been passed with the lockouts, preventing people from being able to go into a premise after 1:30 a.m. And with the alcohol purchasing laws that mean you cannot buy a bottle of wine after 10 p.m. anywhere in the state, which is just such a cruel and stupid and idiotic law that when I was last in Sydney, I got into a major argument with a guy in a pub, because I went to the pub thinking I'll just buy a bottle of wine to go with dinner, because I was having a late dinner, you know. And no, sorry, I can't do that. The pub's still open. The pub will be open till midnight. But no, you can't buy a bottle of alcohol after 10 p.m. Why? Oh, you can't be trusted. You can't be trusted to buy a bottle of wine. No. You can go into the pub, of course, and drink till closing time. For some reason, that's okay. But buying a bottle of wine to take home is, no, we can't let you do that. Sorry, you're a naughty little boy. You know, this is legislation. This is where our country has come to. Now, that you may think, well, we could get all worked up about that and spend all our time just talking about that. But that is just one of so many things. And I will get back to addressing the vaccine issue again, because when you understand the breadth, the scope of the erosions of civil liberties in Australia, the vaccine issue is totally explained. You don't even need to get into the substantive matters about vaccines. You just say, oh, well, this is part of a trend. It's exactly part of a trend. It all fits in. We're going into a phase of society where the corporate government totalitarian partnership has decided to basically just squeeze, 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 squeeze. And it will be affecting far more aspects of your life than what you currently see now. And if you don't expect and see it coming, you'll be really shocked at what will come in a couple of years' time, because it'll be a lot worse than this. I mean, at the moment, what we're seeing is so many petty laws, so many invasions of our basic rights. But bank bail-ins are coming, ladies and gentlemen. They'll be taking your money out of your bank when the next banking crisis occurs, and it could be this year. They will be putting you, they will be basically owning you at some point in the future. And you'll look back at the life you had now, and it will seem idyllic by comparison. There are many, many levels, many, many steps down in this journey down the spiral staircase into hell. It's long and it's slow. And when you're down, when you've gone down a long way and you look back up, you'll be now we're in a stage where we've gone down about halfway, right? And we can look up and see where we came from. Now it's time to take stock. So I'm going to run through a bunch of these stories now with you. And I've just pulled these up, and they're in no particular order. Cyclists forced to carry photo identification and face fines under new rules. Now there's some audio that goes with this. Let me just see if we can play this. And it is going to play an advertisement here. Here we go. Just waiting for that to start. Adult cyclists will be required to carry photo identification and fined 350% more for not wearing a helmet under new rules and penalties to be introduced by the New South Wales government.
Responding to complaints about cyclists openly flouting the law, the state government is jacking up the fines. From March next year, some fines will rise from $71 to more than $400. They include riding dangerously, running a red light, and failing to stop at a pedestrian crossing. And cyclists will also have to carry ID.
Okay, just having a little trouble with the audio there. So, cyclists have to carry ID now. Why on earth would cyclists need to carry ID? It is just an arbitrary imposition of a rule for the sake of power. I mean, the legislation about helmets is already excessive. And in many countries, bicycle helmets are not mandatory. And a lot of research has shown that bicycle helmets do not provide the type of protection that makes them worthwhile. You know, that they don't provide full head protection. They don't prevent concussion. Remember I said that. Bicycle helmets do not prevent concussion. You probably thought that was the main reason you'd wear them. No. They do not prevent concussion. They're not like motorcycle helmets, which go right around your face and provide a solid kind of cocoon to cushion your head in the case that you bang it, right? Bicycle helmets do not do that. So the fines on bicycle helmets are ridiculous and outrageous, but now they've just introduced another level of totalitarian stupidity, which is requiring cyclists to carry ID. Anyway, move on, because we don't have time to go into these stories in too much depth. I just note them for you so you can go back and check it yourself. Picnic permits. Now, in Victoria, the councils have now brought in a system of picnic permits. That's right. If you have more than a certain number of people in a picnic, any number over 20, apparently, you have to have a permit and you'll be fined. That's right. Permits for picnics. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying, something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back. And talking about tyranny in Australia, and just talking here about the picnic licensing issue, there's an article here from The Age by Michael Short. Civil disobedience is needed when laws are stupid. One has not only a legal but a moral responsibility to obey just laws. Conversely, one has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws. And that's a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King. And he says here that American civil rights leader Martin Luther King shared a compelling antipathy to unfairness and injustice. So while it is clearly not a matter of existential angst or political outrage, a heavy-handed, gormless and money-grubbing decision by some councils overseeing a lot of Melbourne's most popular public parks would probably have irked these sterling public thinkers. Councils reckon that they have a right, and maybe they think they have a duty, to force families and friends to get a permit to have a picnic in a public park. Should the gathering number more than 20? 20 is a pretty small number, you know. You could easily have a group of that go over 20, you know. And what this does, you see, this actually just opens the door to some new little money-grubbing, petty enforcement procedures, right? Because they have to enforce. Once they have a law, they have to enforce. So there'll be people going around in uniforms counting the number of people at picnics. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20, 19, 20, 22. Oh, you're over there. We might let you off this time. But you're 22. You know, you're too over the limit. Now, this is the way the actual enforcement, even if it doesn't involve a fine, becomes this hideous intrusion into people's normal enjoyment of their lives. But anyway, moving on, because there are far too many, you know, that's just one. Let's not get all our knickers in a knot about it. Let's not have a Martin Luther King Million Man March over that, because there are 10 other things that we've got to have a Million Man March over, right? We can't just stay with one issue. Tattoo registry. Now, this is not actually in law yet, but it's been proposed from within the Queensland government from Gold Coast MP for Mermaid Beach, Ray Stevens, who put the proposal to State Parliament last Thursday, that there should be a registry of tattoos. And it would force people wanting tattoos to register their intentions with the government in an attempt to stop bikie-related tattoo parlours taking receipts for fake customers. Under the Health Act, there should be a register of people getting tattoos so that we can identify those people getting the tattoos. Yes. And I believe as part of the proposal, they would actually photograph the tattoo registry, and I believe a part of it, I can't actually see it in the article, but I know it has been done in other parts of the world where they photograph tattoos, and it's routinely done with people with criminal convictions, of course, and there are actually tattoo databases of people with criminal convictions, which are used in the United States. But this is not for criminals. This is not people who've gone to prison. This is just people who go to a tattoo parlor and want to get a tattoo. Your tattoo would be registered and probably photographed so that they can just track you wherever you go. The security cameras that watch you can identify you by the tattoo. And, you know, you're just a normal person. You didn't break the law. But, hey, it doesn't matter, right? We need to clamp down on these people. And there are some little sacrifices that we all have to make. And this is a kind of stupid, hideous logic of the argument for totalitarianism and the greater good. It's all about the greater good, you know. You're going to sacrifice a little bit of your freedom to make us all safer. Now, in relation to this story, there is actually a case. There is another law which I need to draw your attention to in Queensland specifically, because Queensland's a state where they brought in the most extreme bikie laws in the country, preventing gatherings of people known to be part of bikie groups, etc. But there is actually a law in Queensland that allows police to randomly stop individuals who have a tattoo which the police considered to be a gang tattoo, and they can do a search, a strip search. And there is a case here, and it's on video, and I'll put it on the website, of a man who was searched, car stopped, the police saw the tattoo of the man in the car, pulled the car over, and he was given a strip search. That's right, because he had a tattoo. That's fully legal. That's passed in through law. Now, I've got another story here, and this is a story from Sydney, and I don't think this is actually fully part of legislation, but the police are doing breath tests on pedestrians. There's an extraordinary video here. I don't really have time to play it, but there's a video here because it was all recorded, and two cops in a patrol car stop a couple who were just walking away from their car in a parking lot. No, actually, they were walking back to their car. The guy who was breath tested had not been driving. There was certainly no proof the police had that the guy was driving, and they didn't say it was about driving. They just said, we're testing pedestrians. That's actually what happened. And the guy refused and had a bit of a standoff with them and just walked away, and they didn't actually pursue it. But wait, there's more. The New South Wales Police now patrol public pools with sniffer dogs. An image of police using sniffer dogs at the popular Andrew Boy Charlton public pool in Sydney is currently going viral, drawing criticism from people saying that it's one step too far in the city's war on drugs. Now, there's a photo here, and it is really quite grotesque. I mean, these Nazi-looking police with their dogs, all dressed in black, parading past these people who are just sunbathing, and the dog is giving them a good sniff up, right? And this is all completely legal. Why is it legal? Well, it all started about 15 years ago. It started actually just before the Olympic Games in Sydney, when they said we need to clean up the streets of Sydney to improve our image for the Olympic Games. We want to bring in sniffer dogs in certain restricted areas. And they did bring in sniffer dogs for public bus stops and a few other places. But then after that, they just expanded the program. And pretty soon they were going into licensed premises. And if you've ever spent time in inner Sydney, you'll see the police go in to these places all the time with their sniffer dogs. In a place that specifically bans dogs, I mean, you're not allowed to bring dogs into licensed premises, but the police have an exemption for that. And they just walk around sniffing everybody up, and people have been strip searched inside pubs in Sydney. This has been going on for years, but now this image of the police doing it at a swimming pool is just par for the course. Of course they can. But guess what? That's nothing. Because soon they'll be able to do it in your home, ladies and gentlemen. Because in the ACT, and we're moving on to another story now, in the ACT, the police have been given power to enter homes without permission to test suspected drink drivers. New ACT laws have closed a loophole that previously allowed drink drivers to avoid being breath tested by giving police the right to enter homes without permission. That's right. If the police suspect you may have been drink driving, and there's no specific time frame there. It's not like you got out of the car and went straight into your house. They just expect you've been drink driving for whatever reason. They can test you for alcohol. They can also test you for drugs. Now, if they suspect an offence has been committed, it's not just drink driving. Sorry, it's not just drink driving. If they suspect an offence has been committed, so for whatever reason, if your next door neighbour rings the police and says, oh, I think the guy next door has been smoking his bong, they can come in. So they will be coming into your home with dogs. Expect it. Get ready for it. Sniffer dogs will be coming into people's homes. Okay, now another story here, and that's related to the tattoo issue, where the police actually drew a taser on the man with the neck tattoo, but we won't go back to that. Okay, I want to talk a little about the whooping cough vaccine, because there is a lot of talk about the whooping cough vaccine becoming mandatory for friends and family. And I've got here a pregnancy website where so many people are commenting and quite proudly and self-righteously up on the little high moral high horse saying that, you know, I didn't let anyone come and see my baby until they had all the vaccine shots, because they're so proud of themselves, these idiots, right, who are brainwashed by corporate propaganda that helps make money for large corporations while making them sick. They're so proud of themselves, and they're so proud of the little power trip that they can get on when they can stop, you know, Uncle Jim from coming to visit his nephew because he didn't get the shot, the booster shot. And this is on pregnancy website here, whattoexpect.com. Now, there are a bunch of other stories here, but I don't really have time to go with them all. Strip searches are now routine in New South Wales. I mean, strip searches. They're basically just walking through the street, and they're doing this with the sniffer dogs, but they're basically just stopping people and strip searching. I've actually seen it happen in Sydney myself. So I'll be getting back to a lot of these issues and cover some of them in more depth in future shows. All of these links are going up on the website. I'll be glad to hear from you and hear about your thoughts. With Truth News Radio Australia, we'll be back next week. See you then.